Good evening and welcome to tonight's webinar, Driving the Green Book. I'm Jamie Stout, a volunteer board member for the Springfield and Central Illinois African American History Museum. Even though our doors are closed at the museum, we feel strongly about continuing our mission of telling authentic stories of African American life from both past and present. Our first webinar about the Eva Carroll Monroe and the Lincoln Colored Home was such a hit, and this one has more than doubled its size. Our community is really catching on to these virtual educational opportunities, and this really gives us a way to reach far more people than we ever could in person. So we thank you, our members, also Blue Star family members that are out there, and then community friends for joining us tonight. We are really looking forward to this. As we do get going tonight, we encourage our audience to participate and ask questions below in the Q&A box. We'll get to as many of them as possible. And tonight, I just have to say, you are in for a real treat. I just happened to stumble upon this podcast, and from the very first episode, I was hooked. Since I've listened to it all the way twice through, I kept thinking, how could I talk to them? How could we tell the Springfield story? How could we inspire others to dig into their culture, their history, and to tell these stories to keep them alive? So I went out on a limb, reached out, and they all said yes. So as you can tell, I am super excited about it, and I'm absolutely honored to be joined by the host of the national podcast, Driving the Green Book, Alvin Hall and Janae Woods Weber. Alvin is an award-winning television and radio broadcaster, best-selling author, and renowned financial educator. Janae is an activist, advocate, and trainer for social justice issues. And as if that wasn't a big enough deal, we have a wonderful local partner with Root History, and we get the pleasure of having Dr. Stacy Grundy join us to inform us about her work with the local connections of the Negro Motorist Green Book. Stacy is the VP of Root History, is a public health practitioner, researcher, and health equity champion. So please help me welcome Alvin, Janae, and Stacy. So I just want to dig right into the podcast with Alvin and Janae first, and then we'll circle around as well to get to the Springfield local history. So Alvin, I guess, help kick us off by how did you guys come up with the idea for this podcast, and why did you start in Detroit?
The podcast came about because I was originally on a flight from New York to London, and I read an article in a travel magazine about the Green Book. I thought, well, that'll make an interesting idea. At the same time, a producer in Wales in the United Kingdom read about the Green Book, and he got together with me, and we did a one episode program for the BBC called The Green Book. And that program was hugely successful around the world, but it never aired in America. And the idea behind that program, which you can still find on the BBC's Radio 4 website, is that we would go from my past in Tallahassee, Florida, follow the civil rights route up to Ferguson, Missouri, where Michael Brown was killed, and bring it into the future. Well, when that program was never broadcast in the States, I was a little frustrated and a little annoyed. So I decided to take that and be creative with it and came up with the podcast idea. Now, what really influenced the podcast was a random visit to the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. They had an exhibition featuring Jacob Lawrence's Great Migration. And in that exhibition, there was a beautiful infographic that showed how the African-American population for various cities in the North had changed from 1910 to 1970. In 1910, Detroit's African-American population was 1.2%, approximately 6,600 people. By 1970, it was 43.7%, one of the largest increases in the city. So thinking about that and looking at the exhibition, I realized that a lot of people would have been coming north from Mississippi, Alabama, the Florida Panhandle, Georgia, from Louisiana up to Detroit, and would be doing this route south. So we chose to go from Detroit south because we thought it would be a way to really follow the path that many people had taken over the years, and also hopefully be able to establish a connection with people listening to the podcast.
That's awesome. I love that. That's a great connection. Janae, could you tell us a little bit more about the history of the Negro Motorist Green Book and even why it was necessary in the times?
Absolutely. The Negro Motorist Green Book is the brainchild of Victor Hugo Green. He was a postman who created this guide that was basically a listing of all of the establishments where African Americans could find safe haven as they were traveling on the interstate highways and on the roads as they would make these long trips from north to south or south to north during the time of segregation, during the era of Jim Crow. Because during that time, Black folks were not welcome in many establishments. And there were areas of this country that were sundown towns where it was not safe to be on the road or to be present within their borders after dark. You could be subjected to all kinds of harm. So he had the ingenious, innovative idea to gather this information and put it together in this publication and sell it so that people would be able to travel safely on the roads.
And how long was the Green Book in print, or how many years was it used?
For about three decades. The first one was around in the 1930s, and the last one, remind me of the year, Alvin,
1967
was the last edition. And as it grew, it not only covered areas within the United States, but also expanded to have an international edition.
Oh, very good. I did not realize that. That's interesting. As I listened, I heard stories of resilience and entrepreneurship. Would either of you help to expand on ways you witnessed this firsthand?
Yes, I think that from the very first day of the trip, we began to see how African Americans really challenged segregation. I think of three words: refusal, resistance, and creativity, when I think about what we saw along the trip. Whether that resistance was starting their own businesses in order to serve African Americans who were not being treated well on the road. You had people in Birmingham, Alabama, like A.G. Gaston, who built the A.G. Gaston Motel, because he said African Americans deserve a first-class place to stay. And he built it based on the Holiday Inn models. And as we went along the trip, we would see these former locations where, you know, Ella Fitzgerald would visit, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, all the stars of their time. And all of these places were designed to provide African Americans with a safe harbor, but also to be able to enjoy the good life. One of the things about the Great Migration was that for many African Americans who had been in the South, as they moved north, they had money for the first time. And they were able to buy cars that enabled them to avoid the indignation of public transportations, as well as the capricious violence or harm that could come from being on some public transportation. So the car became an important measure of their success because it was also a form of protection. So all along the trip, we would see these wonderful places that people would have built, businesses that they would have conceived, downtown areas that were thriving like Ferry Street in Mississippi.
And one of the things that we realized about the Green Book in terms of entrepreneurship is that it's this wonderful record of all of the African American founded and owned businesses that existed during the time of the Green Book. There are very few other places in our historic annals that document the business communities of Black folks, especially in the Deep South. And one of the things that we were really delighted to discover was about the entrepreneurship of Black women. Black women owned restaurants, they owned hotels, they owned boarding houses. I, for one, was tickled to learn this because when I was learning African American history growing up, I was not taught that Black women owned and founded their own businesses. What I knew about Black women was mostly what I had seen in the media. They were maids or they were nannies. So I was pleasantly surprised to discover this deep history of women's entrepreneurship and to discover how Black women were the economic backbone of their communities.
Absolutely. I love that. I love those highlights throughout that as well, because it is eye-opening to be able to point that out and the impact that they're still making today. So appreciate that. One of the things that really drew me to the podcast is that you both are from different generations. So I want to kind of pick your brain about that. How did the lens of your different generations shed light on your Green Book travels?
Oh, that's a really good question, because this was an idea that I had from the very beginning. Having done the earlier podcast for the BBC, I recognized that I was born in segregation, raised in the Jim Crow era. So my point of view would not be necessarily one that everybody would relate to. So I wanted to bring in multiple generations and multiple perspectives on the situation. And so I asked Janae to come with me, because she's about 2 decades younger than I am. And then we had the field producer, Kemi, with us. And Kemi is of African descent, living in Springfield or near Springfield. And therefore, she brought a different perspective on this. For me, a lot of the stories that we heard were very personal. It was the sound of my uncle's son, the cadence of my Uncle Louie, those things that some people say, those little ticks like when people say things. So for me, it often felt very personal, and I had a hard time resisting the emotions of the moment. I would build up this guard, and then somebody would say something, and it would take me all the way back to my childhood. We took trips like this, like the ones we took on for this podcast as children. And my parents didn't own a car, so it was my uncle who always drove us. So, looking out for trouble on the road, looking out for how somebody is following you, making sure you don't look at somebody the wrong way, was all things that I was raised with growing up. And so for me, it was very present. I was very, very happy to have Janae with me, because one of the things that we have not used are the conversations that we had between the interviews. We still have all of that recorded. And Janae had a very different feeling about all of this.
I did, a very different feeling and a different experience. Although Alvin and I share some commonalities along with our other African-American brothers and sisters, there are some touchstones of the African-American experience in this country. Like Alvin mentioned, I am of a different generation. And also, I'm not from the Deep South. I grew up in New England. I grew up in Massachusetts, and I'm biracial. And I grew up with my white mother and in a white town. And I was not taught African-American history growing up. I did not grow up with Black elders. So going on this trip was not only an opportunity to discover this history, this living history for myself, but also to really pull back the veil around what it meant to be Southern, around what it meant to have the experience of growing up in this time of segregation, because I don't have firsthand knowledge of it. Although as a person now living in my 40s, I live with the consequences of that, because we are still feeling the ramifications of Jim Crow and of segregation and of this country's legacy of slavery and racism even today in 2021. So for me, it was a real discovery. It felt like going back in time, but it was also ever present in the moment as well.
Jamie, I think Janae said it perfectly. It was ever present. It really did feel like what we were experiencing was directly related to the news events. It was so close sometime that when we finished an interview and we got back into the car to drive, we couldn't talk for a little while, because it was just so there, and you could not help but see the connections.
Even as you say that, Alvin, right now my heart is fluttering a little bit, and that's a feeling that Alvin and I share every time we talk about these moments. There was so much richness and so much nuance in the conversations that we shared in the car, and I think that's what the magic of this podcast is that it not only gives you a window into other people's experiences in the words, in the voices, in the accents, the beautiful regional accents of the people who experienced them, but you can also feel yourself in those moments as well. And it's an incredibly powerful and humbling experience.
Absolutely. I think before we all got on, we were just talking about living history, and it's quite literally is that, and you could still feel it. And you guys really expressed those emotions very well in the podcast. So that we appreciate that. Was there anything that really surprised you in your travels?
Ooh. Yes. I think when we got to when we got to Columbus and we had that beautiful discussion with Mary Ellen Tyus about Idlewild, Michigan, I didn't realize that there were so many places that Black people who were professionals and who had money had gone. And so I knew about Oak Bluffs on Martha's Vineyard, but I didn't know about Fox Lake, where a friend of mine recently bought a house in Idlewild and all the other places like that. And her description of when Janae asked the question, so what was a perfect day like in Idlewild? It was a perfect question. And so we got a sense of her joy and at the leisure that they experienced being in these all Black environments where all of those signs of Jim Crow, of racism, of repression were not there, where they could enjoy themselves. It was fantastic.
Anything that surprised you, Janae, that stuck out?
I feel like I was surprised every day on this road trip. But I would say that probably the biggest surprise was sort of looking back on all of the interviews and really marveling at the incredible sense of grace with which these people, many of them elders, spoke about these incredibly difficult experiences. They would share stories that would make the hair on the back of your neck stand on end. And then they'd share a really funny anecdote about their family and how their family responded. And the entire room would break into laughter. And I was constantly reminded and surprised by this notion that joy and humanity live on even in times of strife and struggle. And that's one of the beautiful foundations of Blackness in America, is still being able to live whole, beautiful lives. And I do also think that's just exemplified by the existence of the Green Book itself. The Green Book existed to allow African Americans to have the freedom of the open road, even though it was not afforded to us in the same way that it was to white folks. It was a tool. And in some cases, it was a shield. It was a source of protection as well.
And then, Jamie, we had the wonderful experience in Nashville, which we still talk about, which was a complete surprise. We had interviewed Anna Nettles and her aunt, Dr. Evelyn Nettles, who teaches at Tennessee State. And so Janae and I, every town, we would look for food and where we were going to eat. And when we said, could you recommend a restaurant? She said, you're not eating in a restaurant. You're
going to come over to our house. You're coming to my
house. And so here we had just met these people. And it was a really rainy, rainy night. Janae was driving. We were driving there. We don't know where we're going. So it was like having a Green Book experience. And so we were looking for the number of the house. And when we got there and turned in, the lights were up. They brought umbrellas and towels. It was Southern hospitality at its best. And it just reinforced the fact that there was so much grace and generosity in people.
Yes, and that was one of the things that I learned on this trip. I knew that we would be looking into boarding houses or hotels, but one thing I learned that I was not aware of is that for many travelers, they didn't stay in boarding houses or hotels. Instead, they would use word of mouth to stay with friends or with friends of friends who lived in communities along the route that they were traveling. So, you know, they would get to a community and the pastor's wife would say, oh, so-and-so's cousin is passing through and they need a safe place to stay for the night on their way to Louisville. Can they stay with you? And people opened up their homes to each other. And that was that moment that we felt when we stepped out of the car on this dark, rainy, rainy night, and the Nettles came running out to us with open arms and ushered us into their home, and they fed us, and it was wonderful. And I thought, this must be the sense of relief and welcome that Green Book travelers felt. if I feel this right now and I can travel with relative safety compared to what they experienced, I can't even imagine the magnitude of the relief that they would feel when they got to their destination and a home was opened up to them.
Absolutely. I could feel that one in that episode. I felt like I was just sitting around the table. So that one's awesome. And that's really the perfect segue to talk about some of the local stories as well. Speaking of stories, we just have so many rich history here in Springfield and Central Illinois. And so we're joined by Dr. Stacy Grundy. She's the VP of Root History. And she's really the expert in some of the local stops. And I know from the research that I've done that there was a hotel as well, but there were many homes specifically that like you referred to that just opened up their homes to people. So welcome, Stacy. And tell us a little bit more about Root History for those of us that are out in the audience that might not know exactly what it is. It's fairly new to Springfield. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit more about that and how the Negro Motorist Green Book played a vital role in shaping Springfield.
So Root History is a Black museum. We opened in February 2019. So myself and my other co-owners, Dr. Gina Lathan and Kenneth Lockhart, we opened this museum to tell untold stories of the tragedy, resilience, and excellence of Black people along historic Route 66 and in the city of Springfield. We decided to open this museum because there were stories that we never heard of. I have my other co-owners, and we are family, but we all have very different perspectives. Gina was born and raised in Springfield. Kenneth was raised in Jacksonville, but his family's from Springfield. And then I'm from rural Southern Illinois. And so I was very familiar with some of these stories, but just growing up, you hear about, you know, Martin Luther King, and you hear about Rosa Parks, and they did wonderful things. But during this process and doing the research for Root History, we just learned about everyday people. And I think that is, I love to call it place-based history. Just learning about the struggles that our grandparents, our parents went through, just being Black. My family is from Mississippi. And so I knew about the Great Migration. I had learned about Route 66 from the history books, but I never made that connection. And so as I guess you can say, I never saw my story in that road. And so doing that research, Gina actually reached out to someone at the Smithsonian. And so they sent us an excerpt from the Green Book. And so we learned about Springfield, and we just kept doing, you know, all this different research. And so then we started making those connections. And so once we just started developing our idea, we started putting all of these visual aids on the wall to tell the story. Because when people come in, they don't understand, what's my connection to Route 66? I know about the Great Migration. And so telling those stories of everyday people and how they maneuvered the road. Route 66 is known as the road of opportunity. But for Black people, that story looked very different. You know, navigating sundown towns. And so what Victor H. Green did, he really saved lives. And we definitely highlight his significance and his importance to our history, as well as we call them Black business operators. And I'll add a word to Alvin when he was describing them, I'll add revolutionary. What they did, they saved people, they put that economic in, they were the economic engine in our communities. They hired people, you know, they hired Black people who couldn't get jobs elsewhere. They put that money into their community. And as Alvin mentioned, they also helped fuel and fund the civil rights movement. So what we do at Root History is that we do our part to tell that story and to uplift and to inspire the youth and let them know of the people who walked the same streets that they did, they attended the same schools that they did, worshiped at the same churches, that they did great things and you can too.
Absolutely, I love that message. So tell us a little bit more about some of the sites that might still exist here in Springfield. When I was doing some research, and I shared this out on our Facebook group as well, it was an article I found on Hotel Dudley. That really seemed to be a very big draw for Springfield. Can you tell us anything more about that place, that hotel?
Yes, so it was, I think for 20 years, it was the only hotel that actually would serve Black people, Black travelers. It actually was, I think it was A. Morris Williams. He was actually one of the founders. And what's so kind of significant about him is that he also was a shoemaker, he was an entrepreneur, he was a shoemaker, and he also was a lawyer. And so he, you see the duality in Black entrepreneurs and how, what, you know, what they do in the community. And I think very significant is he was actually one of the lawyers who sued the city of Springfield after the Springfield race riots, because a lot of businesses and houses were burned down. And so just having that duality as an entrepreneur and as an educated lawyer and doing what he can to help the community. Along with that Hotel Dudley, there are a lot of tourist homes, as Janae and Alvin mentioned. Just everyday people in Springfield. There was Dr. Shepherd Ware, who was a physician. He worked for Illinois Department of Public Health. He was a part of Sangamon Medical Society, but he also had offered his home for a fee for people to stay at, travelers to, you know, to rest. And so I tell the children when they come through the museum, you know, if you've heard of Airbnb, this is the original Airbnb, right? So there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. And so people have been, you know, figuring out a way to impact their communities as well as make a profit. And so we just try and do what we can to just tell those stories.
Yeah. What were some other businesses besides the hotel and some of the homes that were listed in the Green Book for Springfield or the surrounding area?
Well, there was Clemens Sykes. That was a barbershop. It was actually 11th Street. So the downtown Springfield and the east side of Springfield were home to many Black businesses. There also was Leon Stewart. He was the only gas station owner, to our knowledge, in Springfield. And so learning about him, learning about the different tourist homes, there were different taverns. We actually have a picture on our wall of Chancellor's Lounge, which was a tavern, you know, places for entertainment for people. And so that was one of the pictures that we have that we got from the Smithsonian, you know, trying to figure out who are these people. And so we have that on the wall. And so we ask, you know, older people as they come in, do you recognize anyone? And so we just, it was, and actually we also highlight in our museum, we highlight the Black Firehouse. Kenneth is one of our co-owners. His great grandfather was a firefighter. And so he had never seen that picture before until we started doing this work. And so just helping people make those connections and knowing the history of their city is what we try to do.
Yeah, we hope to have a future webinar on the Black Firehouse in the very near future. So thank you for pointing that out. Stacey, do any of these places still exist? They do? I think I lost you.
Oh, yes, it does. Okay. I'm sorry. You were, yes. So the Black Firehouse still exists. We highlight Lincoln's Colored Home, which you all did the previous webinar. And so we highlight all of those things in Root History.
Very good. Very good. And the next question, and really pretty any of the questions kind of going forward, really can just be for anybody to jump in and answer. But what is being done to preserve these sites, to be able to tell the stories for future generations, both locally and nationally? Janae, do you want to start off with just telling us some of your experiences and how we're preserving this for the future?
Absolutely. Well, first, I think collecting and sharing these stories is preservation for the future. When we were in Atlanta, we had the opportunity to go to the A.G. Gaston Motel, the original site, and that is currently undergoing a deep, deep renovation. I believe that was part of the doing of President Barack Obama, making sure that was about to happen. And we had the opportunity to go there and visit. And as we were standing there, you can really feel this like deep, deep sense of history. So I think that it's important for us to root out these places that still exist in our own community, because unfortunately, one of the things that we discovered was that in so many communities, all that's remaining is a marker that shows where these thriving business districts still remained. So I think that it's important for us to not only remember the places that were, but to try to preserve and save the places that do still exist and to restore them so that they stand for future generations to learn from.
Absolutely. Stacy, what about locally? What are we doing, or what could we do more of, or what's in the process of preserving?
Yes, so at Root History, we work very closely with Landmarks Illinois. We actually were selected as one of their influencers this year. So Root History does our part by telling those untold stories. We actually have also created a Root History Junior Historian curriculum that we, before the pandemic, we were in the schools. And so we work closely with a Springfield Urban League. And so the significance of that is during the segregation, National Urban Leagues actually were places where people could get green books. And so we work closely with their 21st century program, training their students as far as introducing them to museum careers, as well as entrepreneurship, and also just letting them know about the history that's, you know, in the city. And so we have also did a citywide campaign where we had a photo shoot that recognized the significance and the impact of Eva Carol Monroe with starting the first Black orphanage in the state of Illinois and in the city of Springfield. So as a public health professional by day, you know, I never knew about her. I've heard of the Hull House in Chicago, but I never heard of Eva Carol Monroe. And so we just wanted to speak her name. And so we had a photo shoot where we designed a t-shirt, and we had some of the proceeds actually went to, we donated them to Mass for Moms. So for pregnant moms and for mothers who just delivered, for them to have Mass as they entered in and out the hospital to deliver their babies. And so we just do our part to just keep these stories alive. We tell them we're educating the youth and also working with our historic preservation community.
Absolutely. Well, we have a ton of questions coming in from the audience, which I knew we would. So I have planned for plenty of time to hopefully get to as many of those as possible. So we'll just kind of start with some of them, and whoever wants to join in and has an answer for it, go ahead. It could be locally and it could be nationally, referring specifically to the podcast. One of the first ones coming in is Black travelers were not safe as white travelers back then, nor today. So was that something that you considered when you took this trip? And did you face any racism while taking your trip for the Green Book?
That's very interesting, because Janae and I didn't really talk about it, but we made certain decisions almost automatically. For example, she did most of the driving. I only drove occasionally. And between the two of us, we knew that if we got stopped by the police, me as a Black man behind the wheel, I would likely have more problems than she would. So she drove a lot most of the way. We were mindful of following the traffic patterns and the speed limits. So it was always in the backs of our minds as we drove along. We did not have any problems. And I think we were pretty lucky. When I did the first trip for the BBC, that was a different group. It was two Black men, myself and Professor Jonathan Calm from Stanford University, and our British BBC producer. And we made the decision for that trip from Tallahassee, Florida to Ferguson, Missouri, that he would do all the driving, because we thought we were going to be in some difficult places here. And if they stopped us, his plummy British accent might provide us with some protection. But we were very much aware that we did not want to get stopped along the way. And so far we didn't have any problems.
And I'll just add, that is a very real issue. Being from Southern Illinois, when I learned how to drive, this was in the 2000s, my parents sat me down and told me what towns to avoid after dark. And so I think even with the Green Book, even though we don't have that actual Green Book, like Alvin says, it's stitched in our souls.
Yes.
You know, and so it's, so even though we don't have this material book, we know drive on the interstate or avoid this town after dark, or, you know, this person should drive instead of him. So it's very real issue for Black people today.
Absolutely. Jennifer Flack is out there, and she's just sharing her story of she grew up in the Jim Crow era in Oklahoma traveled, and I remember seeing or hearing this in the podcast as well, where the parents, you had prepared food and you took that along with you. You knew exactly where you were going to stop and what accommodations were available. She even mentions that her dad carried a pistol under the driver's seat and they all knew how to use it. Share stories are examples of things that we just might not think about. But I think there are other stories. I know Catherine Harris is out in the audience as well. And she has shared that story with me before that, you know, you had prepared food that you took along.
Yes. Hank Sanders, who was the first person elected to the Alabama Senate since Reconstruction, told the most amazing story that he was at a civil rights meeting and there was a white woman and she had to go back home. And so the people organizing the meeting asked him if he would drive her back home. So here he is on the road at night with a white woman in his car, driving 20 miles. And he said a truck pulled up behind him and he could tell by looking in the rearview mirror that it was one of those with a shotgun rack on the back, perhaps guns. And he said he would speed up and they would speed up. He would slow down and they would slow down. And it kept going back and forth. And he was anxious and he really believed that he was going to get killed. When eventually they pulled up beside him, they looked at him. He was prepared to be shot at that point. And they pulled in front of him. Once they pulled in front of him and drove off in the distance, then he had the next problem. Maybe they were waiting for him up there, right? And as he said, it was against his instincts to take her on home, but it was also against his instincts not to take her home. So that's an example where he was really caught in a quandary and driving at night in many of those towns. He said, you lived with fear.
Yeah.
And I think that fear is present today. And sometimes when you're on the road at night or you're going through a place you don't know, you can have that keen sense of discomfort.
Definitely. So even something as small as I was talking to my mom and how they would visit their grandmother in Missouri, and you would always have to call and make sure you made it, let them know you made it. And so even now we do that, you know, it's like, oh, they just, and so like, why do they really want to know? Because some people didn't make it. You know, sometimes that they might have used that shotgun. And so that we have just created our own way of survival, you know, during these times. And so it, you know, just having this book and just really being able to tell these stories, I think is just so powerful.
Yes.
Absolutely. It goes back to resilience for sure, then and now for sure. One of the questions coming in from Dan, he says, I really felt it was a very powerful first person stories. Which of those really touched you or which of those really stood out to you in your travels?
There's one story in particular that stands out to me, Crystal Churchwell. We interviewed her in Nashville, and she told the story about how her father, a young Black man, was a student at the world-renowned Vanderbilt University, and he would ride the bus to school every day. And he would pick up the bus in his neighborhood, and as the bus would travel through town, it would pick up all of the women who were working as domestics. And they would eventually travel to this neighborhood called Belmead. And that's where the women would start to get off. So eventually he would be one of the last people on the bus by the time that it got to Vanderbilt. He rode this bus every day with these same women. They got to know him. And he said that every single day they would, you know, give him little snacks. They would give him little treats and kisses. And they'd say, oh, baby, we know you're going to do so good at school today. We are so proud of you. We are rooting for you. We are praying for you. And, you know, they not only gave him the strength of community to be one of the few Black students at Vanderbilt, but when he stepped off that bus onto campus, he also felt, as Crystal described to us, like he was carrying the weight of all of that anticipation and all of the dreams that they never got to accomplish, and that he really was stepping forward into the future, not only for himself, but as a representative of all of these people who were you know, really diminished by Jim Crow and by segregation, and that this was a weight that was not only motivating, but that it was also an emotional toll on him. And hearing her tell that story was incredibly powerful to me, because these are the kinds of stories that, you know, really shape generations of families and really make you think hard about that old saying, you have to work twice as hard to get half as much. We heard that over and over on our trip from so many people. And I really feel like that particular story exemplifies that piece of Black culture that is ingrained in all of us.
And for me, the story, which Janae knows well, which I always try to tell without breaking up, but it's very hard, is Hank Sanders' story. And he was raised very poor, I mean, extremely poor in the South. And I identified with a lot of that story. And during one of the most difficult periods, he said his mother would bring them all together, make them sit on the floor around her. The family had one chair in the living room in that three-room house, or maybe it was a two-room house. They had one chair, and she would have all the children come around her. And he was ambitious. He wanted to become something. And she would say, things are really bad. Things are always bad with this big, poor family, but they're really bad now. And then she would pause, as if drawing them all to her. And she would say, but don't worry, I'm at my best when things are bad. I love that story. I just love it. And Hank went on to Harvard University to become a lawyer. It's a great story.
That's awesome. That's very good. Were there stories that you just couldn't fit into any episode as you were doing the producing?
Yes, that was the most difficult thing. What stories? I think we interviewed a 100 and how old was she, Janae?
Miss Odile Washington was 110 years old on the day that we met her.
Exactly. And her stories about cooking for people, they were not quite coherent, but she remembered cooking. She remembered all the wonderful things, how good it was to have a restaurant. And it was just one of those stories. We just couldn't figure out a way to make that story work in the podcast. I really wanted that story to work. Also, we interviewed Mervyn Obispin, who had been a reporter for a newspaper in Louisville. And he told stories about his childhood, about growing up at Opelousas, Mississippi, a town of Creole people. And he told us some great stories about his own life growing up there. And we just couldn't use all of them. His relatives built a motel called the Sid Sylvia Motel. And it became a place where Black people would stay. And the way they advertised it, they would have a big billboard with a picture of his Aunt Sylvia on it, so they knew it was an African-American shop. We kept part of the story, but it was a much more rich story than we could put into the podcast.
And like Alvin mentioned earlier, there were so many stories just between Alvin and myself around so many of these experiences that we weren't really fully able to capture in the podcast. For example, we spent an afternoon at the Equal Justice Initiative and the Lynching Memorial in Montgomery. And I'm still processing what that experience was like, but earlier you asked a question about why is it important to preserve these sites. I also think it's important to preserve evidence of the experiences that African American people endured. Because when you go to the Lynching Memorial, you are confronted by row after row of these large stone monuments that are engraved with the names of terror victims, organized by county, by state. When you stand in front of that memorial, it looks like it's endless. There are so many names. And as you walk into this monument as well, the monuments begin to rise up above you because they're hanging from the ceiling. And it's the effect of bodies hanging from rope. Those are experiences that I don't know that we were able to fully capture in the podcast. There wasn't enough time, and the conversations that Alvin and I shared in the car after them, although that particular afternoon, there was quite a bit of silence in the car as we drove away before we could begin to speak with each other. But those are the kinds of experiences I wish that everyone who was curious about this history or who has African-American heritage could be able to experience, because this wasn't so long ago that this happened. We talk about history like it's this thing that happened 100 years ago, but the history of Jim Crow is still in living memory of so many people. Absolutely. But the stories are not always shared. And that's why it's important to capture them and preserve them with a reverence and with a respect for the people who are sharing them.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That was moving. Tears to my eyes. I just can't imagine the feeling there. So, Stacy, there's some questions coming in from Root History. They're asking, was the service station that Root History is located in, was it an Esso station?
No, so Root History is actually located in an old gas station that was used at the height of Route 66. It actually was a Texaco gas station. But we do, inside of the museum, we do have exhibit that Esso exhibit. The significance with Esso Gas is that was a gas station that actually offered green books, but they also had a entrepreneurship program for Black entrepreneurs to open their own gas stations. And so we highlight that Esso is a derivative of Standard Oil. And so it just seeing our country's history of, you know, entrepreneurship programs and what those type of programs, how they impact our communities, and how even today, I'm sure that the number of Black gas station owners are very scarce. And so how as a country we are helping Black people of color start those businesses that can impact their communities positively.
And then another question came in as well about Root History is, are there field trip opportunities?
There are. So currently, because of the pandemic, we are closed. But if you go to our website, routehistory.net, you can join our mailing list. And so we will be reopening in the late spring, early summer. And so if you join our mailing list, then you'll be notified of when field trip signups will start. And so we'll have sign up lists. So schools and church groups and just anyone who is curious, you all can sign up. We actually just received a grant from Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, which we helped purchase our building. And we actually have some nice exhibits and some that we're going to be launching this summer. And so we're just so excited, and we just hope that everyone come and just visit us.
Absolutely. It's a great place. I know I was fascinated from the minute I walked in. Mm-hmm. There's a question going back to really the early beginning of this webinar. There was a question coming in saying the Green Book covered international ground. You had mentioned that. Can you talk more about that, how it was utilized? If they were the same amount of time, was it the same time period that it was used in the US? Do you know of any horror stories of Black people traveling internationally to cause the production of the Green Book? Just a little bit more about the usage internationally.
Well, I know there was an international copy of the Green Book created in 1963. Mm-hmm. I happen to have a facsimile copy of it, and it's not as comprehensive as the United States copy, but there are still quite a few listings in it.
And part of it came about because Victor had opened a travel company and he was offering people tours. So he would arrange tours for companies and send people to Europe, to Canada, to the Bahamas. And so this was so that people would have a sense if they went on their own, what were the places where he had already sent people that they could go. So it was designed to be helpful to the independent traveler. One of the things that is important to understand about the Green Book is that it rolled out. So for the first issue in 1936, it just covered the New York area, primarily New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, sightings, most of the places in New York City were from 125th Street above. None were in Midtown Manhattan. The next issue covered down the East Coast to Florida. And then by the 1938 issue, it started to roll across America and add in more and more states over time. And then it moved to Canada, and then it moved to the Caribbean, always expanding as Black travelers wanted to go to more places and see more places as a result of their newfound economic ability. The magazine and the guide offered them safe harbors there.
Absolutely. So as we're wrapping up a lot of the questions, I know when Alvin and Janae and I talked about this in the very beginning, Janae said, what do you want to come from this? And so I guess I'm turning that question around to you guys, each of you, to answer tonight. What do you want our audience to do now that they've heard these stories, that hopefully they've went back and, or if not, listened to all the podcasts? What do we do now? How do we keep these going?
I'll answer first. Okay. For me, I think I want people to share the podcast with as many people as possible and begin talking about these things that we discuss in the podcast. And I think it will give people a sense of the resilience that people showed, how we survived really dark times, and how we will continue to survive dark times and build more independence for ourselves. Janae asked Jamon Jordan on the first day of filming in Detroit about how many times the dollar rolled over in the Black community. And he pointed out that in Detroit, dollars in the African American community rolled over 10 times before they left the community, which is impressive. I think that we need to start to use some of the knowledge in this podcast that we learn about things like that, to think about ways of making our own economy work better for us and to build for ourselves the future that we want. I think the podcast is both a window and a mirror. It's a mirror on our lives, but it's also a window into other people's lives that gives us a sense of what we can do, how we can be creative. Remember those words I'm going to add in, Stacey's word, refusal, resistance, creativity, and being revolutionary.
I hope that folks experiencing this podcast are provoked into a deep sense of curiosity and wonder about what this history looks like in their own communities. Every community has some relic, has some remnant of Jim Crow or segregation, whether you know about it or not. I hope that people really develop an appetite for wanting to understand the true fullness of our American history, of which Black history is a deep foundation, a deep cornerstone. It's Black History Month right now, but Black history is every day. Black history is American history, and we have been taught a very sanitized and whitewashed version of our history. So I hope that this builds some excitement for people to go and to discover the truth. And I hope that when that happens, that people won't just look into books or into libraries or into official recordings, but that they will seek out the people in their lives who still carry these memories or who heard these stories from their grandparents or their aunts or the women in their church. Because one of the things that really matters in the way that this history gets shared is who gets to tell the story. And that's what I really appreciate most about having been able to experience building this podcast with Alvin, was really being able to create this space where people who experienced this history were able to share the story in their own words and in their own voices. And that's a really powerful, powerful tool to use for sharing and learning history.
Absolutely.
So I think for us, Root History, we just want to definitely continue sharing the root, we call it the Root History Experience, the untold stories of revolutionary, inspiring everyday people who went to work every day, who loved their families, who ran their households, who worked businesses, and just share that with our youth. With our curriculum, we hope that we can share that curriculum with so many other students, young people, especially as Illinois, 2026 will be the 100th centennial year of Route 66. And so as a state, as a country, as we're preparing for that centennial, it is imperative that we share these stories with our youth so that they can be prepared, especially for our communities can be prepared as well. We know that tourism brings billions of dollars into the city of Springfield, as well as the state of Illinois. And so we just wanna be in a place where our communities are prepared and that we can also receive some of those dollars and so that we can use that to improve our communities.
Absolutely. I think all of those are exceptional. I'll throw one thing out there as far as the Springfield and Central Illinois African American History Museum. We encourage everyone to, once we're open, hopefully in the near future, to come check us out. We have multiple exhibits. We do have examples of the Green Book in our possession there. The exhibits are always changing. So again, just telling these stories, and many of you reached out tonight, even in the questions below, to share your own personal stories, to say, hey, I remember this, and these were my personal experiences. So I encourage you to continue to tell people of your own family, and then also people that don't necessarily know these stories, to just keep them alive. So again, as we wrap up the evening, I just wanna say sincerely, thank you to Alvin, Janae, and Stacy for giving of your time tonight to share these experiences, to share these stories, to say the names that we want to keep alive for generations to come. I know I speak for the entire audience that tonight was very educational. I learned a lot. I know our members appreciate the insight tonight as well. I do encourage everyone to go listen to all the episodes of the podcast. You can find it out there at Apple Podcasts. You can also Google Driving the Green Book podcast. You'll see all of them on their website as well. And Alvin, Janae, Stacy, could you tell the audience tonight where they can remain in touch with you or future projects that you might have coming up?
Yes,
I'm about to do a documentary on the Tulsa Massacre. It will be 100 years in June. And so I'm doing a BBC documentary on that. And I can be reached easily at alvin@alvinhall.com.
And I can be found on Twitter at Janae P. Woods.
And you can find us at Root History, www.roothistory.net, as well as on Facebook, Root History, and Instagram, Visit Root History.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for sharing that. Tonight's presentation is being recorded. We'll post it on our website and our Facebook page within the next 24 to 48 hours. We encourage all of you to share this with others in your life. When we tell these stories, we uncover new stories, and we also grow future historians. So I really encourage you to continue these stories going. We also check back to our website for future virtual programming like this. We have some ideas in the hopper, but we know for sure we'll be having a Negro Baseball League exhibit in the very near future. And so we will have a webinar that will coincide with that as well. So check back for future opportunities. They're always free and always open to the public. And as we close out tonight, I do want to remind you that there will be a short survey that will pop up. It does help us to improve our offerings and let us know what you liked, what you'd like to see in the future. And also consider making a donation to the Springfield and Central Illinois African American History Museum. And you can do that at www.spiaahm.org. That helps us to be able to continue these authentic African American stories for generations to enjoy. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us tonight, and thank you all to the members in the community as well. So again, thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.